as we celebrate Memorial Day weekend, we just had another wave of roster cuts. What does that mean for the WWE? We're going to cover that and more on the new episode of the Wrestling Guys podcast, and that starts right now. Coming to you from the Forgotten Borough of Staten Island, New York, this is the Wrestling Guys podcast. This is the fans' perspective on all things in the world of WWE and the world of professional wrestling. We are your hosts. I'm Eric, otherwise known as Fizz. With me, as always, my tag team partner, Chris Never Miss. I don't have a nickname because I'm too saddened to even think of one right now. We have a new wave of roster cuts. What does that mean for WWE? AEW Double or Nothing just passed, and all that, plus our Ultimate Warrior biography, Dark Side of the Ring. And you know we don't do anything until we do our usual socially distant clink. Hopefully we can wind these down very soon. And we clink that to start the show. I am somber. I cannot lie. I was having a good weekend. And then last night, the Knicks got bounced out of the first round of the playoffs after a very, very miraculous season that no one expected, which was great as the four seed. So they overachieved. So I'm happy about that. The future looks promising. But still, I felt like they could have beaten the Hawks. However. And then the same day, there is another wave of roster cuts. But these, I mean, if you thought the Samoa Joe and the other ones stood out, like the Iconics and everything, these were glaring. And we started discussing yesterday, is this a sign of things to come? So, Chris, I'm going to lay it all out on the table right now. Yesterday, Ruby Riott, Braun Strowman, Aleister Black, Lana, Buddy Murphy, Santana Garrett, all released in a new wave of roster cuts. And I mean, Aleister Black just debuted 2 weeks ago, re-debuted against Big E. He was doing this Dark Father gimmick. He was going to do something against, Big E, maybe a feud. Braun Strowman was just in the main event of the previous pay-per-view, a former Universal Champion a year ago. Lana was in a nice tag team with Naomi, seemed like she was gaining some steam. Buddy Murphy was in a huge storyline last year, all the way up until the beginning of this year, and kind of got dropped. Ruby Riott, a member of the Riott Squad, her and Liv Morgan, another tag team that was on WrestleMania. And Santana Garrett, from what I've read, was set to debut this Friday on SmackDown. So what the fuck is going on? That's what we want to touch on here.
So a lot of thoughts about what's been going on and what all this means with the cuts. And there's a lot of rumors out there. You know, you look at the social media and you read the comments and you see the rumors, because they are just rumors. However, where there's smoke, there's fire. And I think there's a little bit more fire to these rumors. But to touch on the releases themselves, they're all disappointing. But the one that stands out the most, obviously, is Braun Strowman. Yeah. Apparently, he had a contract until 2023. It was like a million a year. Yeah, a million a year. So when you hear about budget cuts and why these releases happen, and it's because of budget cuts, you know, you also hear about record profits for the WWE, and you know how much money they've been making throughout the pandemic, and you know, setting their books on fire, if you will, because they've, like I said, record profits. They've been making a shit ton of money. Aleister Black is disappointing because we all felt like he was better and just never really got used on the main roster, you know, not to his full potential. Ruby Riott, I enjoyed her a lot more in NXT, but she was somebody that, again, untapped potential, I think. Lana, you know, we can say what we want about Lana. I know that they said that she worked hard to get better, so that's admirable. But when you look at these cuts and they say, well, we did it for budget cuts, there's another part to it too. As I was listening to Jim Cornette, and he talked about how the WWE also released about 60 of their office employees, so people behind the scenes. And apparently the man behind all of this is a man named Nick Khan, who is the president and the CRO of WWE. And that the real reason why they are doing this is to set up a sale, and that the WWE will be sold. Now, I know for years that has been kind of lingering as Vince McMahon has gotten older. And I think there has even been questions asked directly to Vince himself. And the response has been, well, we're always open for business. Now Vince McMahon is 75. The question is, how much longer is he going to be around? I feel like we've been asking that question for a long time. How much longer is Vince going to do it? People have been saying Vince needs to step down, hand over the reins. But to actually sell the WWE is mind-boggling. Like, it's crazy. These cuts, I think, are proof, especially Braun Strowman. They are proof that this is more than likely going to happen. The WWE is going to sell. Who it sells to obviously remains to be seen, because right now they're just rumors. I think it's pretty clear what they're setting themselves up for. And I don't know what that means for the future of wrestling, for the future of WWE. I'll tell you what, though, if I'm AEW, I'm on the phone right now with all of those people who just got released. I'm calling up Strowman. I'm calling up Aleister Black. I'm calling up Ruby Riott. Lana will probably go there because of Miro. But I'm calling them up and I'm saying, hey, you guys have a home here.
Braun Strowman, especially, a former Universal Champion who has a lot of talent. I was big on Braun Strowman. Anybody, New Japan, Impact would probably be better off with him too. You know, like, here's the thing, and so this happens. So so the first wave of cuts, we talked about initially, and we said, hey, this happens every year around. It used to happen every year around WrestleMania time. This is nothing new. I mean, it was weird to see people like the Iconics and Samoa Joe, like those people, get released. It was, and we were taken aback. But you know what? That's happened before, and never say never about people returning. But now this wave, first of all, also I want to include Tom Phillips in this latest round of releases as well. So, you know, he was a great commentator. He got demoted to 205 Live when Adnan Burke had his 7-week run, now replaced by Jimmy Smith. Who did a great job one day, though. He did a good job.
I didn't watch Raw, so I can't.
I thought he was immediately better than Adnan Burke. No disrespect to Burke, but it just wasn't working. So Tom Phillips is in there as well. Braun Strowman is everything that Vince, if you hear everybody else that's on the inner circle, no pun intended there, with Vince, is everything he loves about a wrestler. Big, muscular, right? Yeah. He's moving a ton of merch. He has marketability. He could talk, all right? He won the Universal title by beating Goldberg last year at WrestleMania. He had a pretty significant run through SummerSlam. And to see that, and then you see that, well, the fact that, well, he was making $1 million a year, his contract was kind of bloated. You can't tell me, and again, we're not on the inside here. This is pure fan speculation, but WWE is a publicly traded company. Part of that is having to disclose your profits each year to your shareholders. Yeah. Okay? Mm-hmm. So you can't tell me that WWE had their most profitable year in WWE history in 2020.
And then doing budget cuts.
And you're doing budget cuts. You released all these people last year during the pandemic. You released even more people after WrestleMania for budget cuts, and these people for budget cuts. Because you know what? WWE is on track to do the same profit in 2021. So we're not idiots. I'm not a shareholder, but don't fucking piss on my head and tell me it's raining. Don't tell me it's budget cuts, bro. You know? Now, do companies do make cuts to maximize their profits going into a new fiscal year, quote unquote? That does happen. But I'm also going to throw something else at you here. Last week, Amazon bought MGM Studios for $8.4 billion.
Yep.
Which includes part of their movie library, because they don't own, MGM sold off a big portion of their film library to to Turner Media, which in turn is now owned by Warner Media, which is, mm-hmm. you know, your HBO Maxes and TNT and all that stuff. Right. But the big thing behind it was the James Bond franchise.
Yep. Right?
So Amazon Prime has now owns that, you know, what in association to whatever TV shows and everything else that MGM has. $8.4 billion. The year before that, during the pandemic, they bought Whole Foods for mm-hmm. $14 billion. These big media conglomerates are buying these companies up to compete with your Netflixes of the world and your Hulus and everything like that. And they're absorbing all these companies. Mm-hmm. You see Disney under Disney Plus consolidates the now Fox Film Studios.
Yeah.
Star Wars and Marvel. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Warner Media is now merging with Discovery Plus. And so now Discovery and Warner Media are now combining together. AT&T, which is the parent company, is not letting it go. And now you see this new deal with Peacock that they have going through. Now their parent company is Comcast, if I'm correct. I'm not surprised with the announcing of MGM being bought for $8.5 billion that Vince is like, yo, let's try to stick our toe in the water to see if one of these big media companies wants to buy us up. Now, if you could even sell WWE for half that, $3-4 billion, I mean, you're out. And we said he's 75, looking to retire. Coming from a fan's perspective, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I always felt that it was like a family-owned business, so it was never going to leave the family. He was either going to go to Stephanie or Shane or Triple H or and Stephanie or like a combination of all three. But at the end of the day, it is a business, right? So
yeah, and it's the you know, it depends on what side you want to stand on to look at it, of whether this is good or not. Like, if you're Vince McMahon has been running the company since 82, I think. You know, he's poured his everything that he has into the WWE. Yes, he's had help, but he is the guy at the top that will always get the accolades for what he was able to do with the WWE, making it global, doing things like the WWE Network, all the merchandising, movie studios. I mean, everything that they did is because of his vision. He's the guy at the top. You know, on the other side of that, the dark side of business, if you will, the reason why there are people in this country that do not like capitalism is because Vince McMahon is selling the company, allegedly, to make himself billions of dollars, and there are going to be a lot of people that are going to suffer for it. People are out of jobs because of it. From a fan's perspective, when you look at the potential of WWE being sold and who's going to buy it, and again, I do want to point out, as you did, we are not industry insiders. We're just a couple of guys who are fans that are talking about it. And the reason why I've said that 100 times before, and I'll say it even more, is because everything that we say, you know, anything anybody says gets analyzed, because we're on, you know, especially if you're on the outside looking in. But let's refer to what happened when AOL Time Warner merged and what happened to WCW.
Disaster.
Right. So the reason why wrestling has been able to be successful for as long as it has been, especially the WWE, is because there are wrestling people running it. Right, Vince McMahon may not like the word wrestling. You know, he says he's in the entertainment business. They make movies. However you want to disguise that, at the end of the day, it is a wrestling company. And the reason why it is successful is because it came from a wrestling guy. The reason why all those territories, when they had their heyday, were successful is because they were run by wrestling people until Vince McMahon bought them out. WCW was successful until it wasn't, because it was run by wrestling people. And when AOL Time Warner bought it, or when they merged, the first thing on their list was to get rid of WCW, because they did not like wrestling. And that's why Vince McMahon was able to buy it for, what, $1.5 million, $2 million?
Yeah, it was I wish I could have put some money together.
Right. It was pennies on the dollar, really. So my thing is, if he's not willing, which is also another part of this, not willing to sell it, at least sell it to his children, Stephanie and Shane, or to Triple H, if you're going to sell it off to who knows who, these are not wrestling people. They're not going to understand, and they're not going to react properly when Raw and SmackDown dip in the ratings. They're not going to react properly when Roman Reigns, who is the top guy, comes out and gets booed by everybody. They're going to think, well, we're failing, so let's cancel. It's like canceling a season, right? Well, it's like what Netflix does. If 100 million people aren't watching it the first season, Netflix is like, well, we're just going to cancel it. That is my fear of what's going to happen to the WWE if there is people that are running it that are not wrestling people. Now, yeah, they could, you know, whoever buys it could keep Shane and Stephanie and Triple H employed, and they can have wrestling people running it. But at the end of the day, they're not going to be the ones that are going to be the ultimate decision makers. So my thing is, I'm actually nervous of where the WWE can wind up if it gets sold to a conglomerate that knows nothing about the wrestling business.
Here's the thing, and I love the WCW analogy there, right? But WCW was never viewed as something viable for Turner. They always hated it. So it wasn't
right.
something that
That's
popped
true,
up.
Yeah.
So when the AOL Time Warner thing came up, you know, it was just, no one liked it to begin with. Let's get rid of this fucking thing, right?
Even when it was making them billions of dollars, they were like, right. you know, fuck this, basically.
Right. WWE has a huge deal with Fox, has a huge deal with Peacock now. Again, record profits. you would have to screw this company up royally for it to take any kind of dip. So if a non-wrestling person were to come in and control it, you would really have to fuck this up if you somehow sink this ship, right? And you know, like you said, okay, well, it's not doing well. Well, fuck it. SmackDown's doing 2 million in ratings every week. Raw's dipping down. Are you going to cancel the show? Okay, great. Cancel one of your flagship shows, and there's your dip in revenue, right? It's a trickle-down effect, right? It's going to affect everything. It's going to affect the bottom line. You would really, really have to screw that up. And I don't, you know, because at first, you know, I was talking to, you know, friends of the show and stuff, and I was like, if they do sell, is it a percentage? You know, 50, 60% when Vince maintains, you know, they have controlling interest and maybe Vince has a minority stake.
Right.
You know, something like that, you know. And, you know, my friend was like, no, I think it'd be for the whole thing, be 100% of the company. But unfortunately, Vince, Shane, and Stephanie, even if they pull their money together, don't have the amount of money that they could probably get from a big media conglomerate.
Right.
All right. So do they keep them on? I think so, absolutely. Do they have some ownership stake in it? Maybe. You saw what happened when UFC was sold and how Dana White kind of has a little stake in it and he stayed on as president. So he's still running the I don't want to say day to day, but he's still president of the company. Mm-hmm. So they can still keep on your Triple H and your Stephanie's and stuff like that. And because, you know, they've ran it for years. They know how to run a wrestling company. Why mess with something that is good? Only now it's under your banner making you money. That makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, pure speculation. They may never sell at all, but if they do, that would be the right way to go. I mean, you would really like, unless they oust everybody and they put somebody in and that guy just screws the hell out of it, there goes our childhood out the window. And I don't think they would be dumb enough to do that. I think they would keep people in place to keep the wheels moving. You know what I mean?
Let's hope so, at least. I think there are, unfortunately, there are people stupid enough to go that route, but it's unfathomable to me, like, to think that the McMahons would not be running the WWE anymore.
I mean, and that's crazy.
Yeah, for it to be under somebody else's banner, and it just feels like it just becomes another. It's not the same anymore.
Well, let's play devil's advocate. Everyone's been telling Vince to step down for years, and now he's going to sell. Now everybody has a problem with him selling. Maybe you'll get somebody who's going to turn it around.
Yeah, maybe, but I think stepping down is like, hey,
this stuff, you know. Yeah, I'm stepping down, yeah, and here's Triple H. He's gonna take
right,
over.
Yeah,
I know,
yeah.
I understand what you're saying, but I mean, maybe there's some good that may come out of this, you know. I mean, look, they had and I'm looking at cage side seats now, and they had a quote from Dave Schilling. He used to work in WWE Creative, and he had a theory that he threw out on Twitter, and he was like, I think WWE is for sale. You don't cut talent assets on this level unless you are trying to maximize profits before a sale. Braun is a legit top guy, a former world champion, and a merchandise mover. Aleister Black was getting a push on TV last week. This is very telling. And again, sprucing up the balance sheets, as they say, right? You're making it look better. You don't have all this, you know, contracts weighing you down. So now you look more, profitable. And like I just said, with the fact that Amazon just acquired MGM for $8 billion and Warner and Discovery merging together and all these big, big sales. I mean, there's a reason why. So George Berrios and Michelle Wilson were Vince McMahon's like long time, if this was the mafia, I'd call them capos, but like lieutenants, kind of like, you know, like hit right underneath Vince. And in early 2020, he got rid of them and then brought Nick Khan on in that summer. On the flip side to it, too, if you look looking at this article further, Vince was telling investors he wanted to do something like a big sale possibly before he brought Nick Khan on board. But bringing Nick Khan is actually putting those wheels in motion. I just think that, you know, don't insult these people who have worked for you, bled for you, put their bodies on the line with some bullshit like budget cuts. I think that's insulting to them. You know what I mean? Looking at, and of course, you know, who doesn't? Renee Young did say something on Twitter about like, what a poor mismanagement of talent and stuff like that. CM Punk, of course. Yeah, I got to mention CM Punk here.
Yeah, I saw what he said.
It was just great. So one guy quotes on Twitter, at Freddie in Space or John Squires, one thing that's consistently bummed me out about WWE in recent years is that there's been a wealth of incredible talent in that company, but they rarely seem to really know what to do with any of it. This latest wave of releases is truly a stunning reflection of that issue, which I actually completely agree with. It was stacked.
Yeah.
Stacked, right? And there's certain people that we were talking about this a few weeks ago, like, why isn't this guy being used? Why isn't that guy mm-hmm. being used? Why isn't this girl being used? Why isn't this lady being used? And Punk quotes a tweet and puts, it's like a movie with a blockbuster budget and cast, but if it's written by creatively bankrupt nincompoops, specifically for an audience of one, in a language nobody understands anymore, it's trash. But people watch it because they like movies. And he's probably right. He's absolutely right. Yeah. I think he kind of hits the nail on the head there. He really does. You know, some people may disagree with what he says, and sometimes I feel like he does come off like he's hating constantly. But I think on this, in this particular point, he's absolutely right. It's incredible to me that Aleister Black had a ton of steam leaving NXT. He was an NXT champion. He had a great thing going over there. Him and Ricochet had something going good. You know, debut at WrestleMania and there's all this stuff. And then Braun with the Wyatt family and being Universal Champion last year. And just like all these guys, like I have gone on here and said, if they did Aleister Black correctly, he could be like the next gen, almost like a next gen Undertaker, but with his own spin on it. And he was doing all these little things. Aleister Black, to his credit, now going back as his name on as Tommy End, said great things about the company, said great things about Vince. He said that every time he cut a promo or vignette with the Who Wants to Pick a Fight with Me, he was like, the background color indicated who was going to be the next opponent. Like these little nuances that I didn't realize that creative came up with him in conjunction. Mm-hmm. The fact that he wore a contact in the eye that Seth Rollins attacked, so it was like a different color, right. Pupils on, like that was great stuff. I mean, he even said too, like, he says, you know, in my conversations with Vince, I have a good relationship with him. He was always very positive. I always told him how I felt. He always respected that about me. He always praised me on my creativity and my abilities. I always told him, he's like, you never truly know how things ended the way they did, but I could tell you from my point of view, and the word that I was always given was that Vince was always pretty high on me because he went on Twitch and people were commenting how, like, how is it that Vince was down on you specifically? He said, no. He said that Paul Heyman and Bruce Pritchard specifically fought for him a lot, tried to protect him. They fought tooth and nail for him. I mean, he was very, very positive where you see a bunch of people, you know, leave and they want to shit on the company. But he did say this. So we had did say a few weeks ago that Zelina Vega was supposedly coming back. And supposedly that's not true. Possibly that she didn't even sign a contract from what I'm reading. Again, these are just rumors, but this is directly from her husband's mouth. You know, he says the problem is that these internet media people make up like 95% of the story with like about 5% truth. And he'll say like, oh, subscribe to my Patreon right now and I'll give you the inside story. And then you pay money for this and you never get anything. That's what happened to my wife. He's like, they're making up these stories about her. They're affecting her career. And he's like, but you know, oh, but sign up to my Patreon now. So pretty much like shitting on the internet, you know, wrestling journalist in quotations. So they use that, you know, wisely. But then they'll back it up with something like, oh, you know, plans change at any time, so you never know. You know, it's bullshit. I think he handled his with a. I thought he handled this with a lot of grace. I thought he did really good. But he's one of those dudes that I think is like a, for me, it's like a gut punch because I thought he was a superstar. I thought he was going to be a superstar.
It is a gut punch because he was one of my favorite talents in NXT. You know, I loved his look, his presentation. You know, and he could have done so much. And yes, he could go to AEW and we'll watch him. Yes, he can go to Japan or he can go to or whatever the case is. It's not like he's going to go away. We're never going to see him again unless he decides to just not wrestle anymore. But there's always something different about being a part of the WWE, especially when you're a fan. You know, even when you're a fan, when you're watching guys go to WWE, it's something that feels different. And when they leave, it's disappointing. Especially when you feel like they didn't get to do what they are or what you think they're capable of doing. Like I said before, if I'm AEW, I'm scooping these guys up and AEW, I know that they've been talking a lot about the WWE lately. You know, Tony Khan kind of cut a promo on them and they're probably rubbing their hands together thinking that, hey, we have the upper hand here. But it is all speculation. You know, because nothing, it's just rumors, but I think there's strong possibilities as to what they are trying to do. But the next question is, who's next? Because apparently they're not done.
No, so I'm glad you pointed that out. So according to a bunch of stuff that I read, it looks like it says that more releases will be coming.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who at this point? Like, then what are you going to do? Are you going to keep Roman in the New Day and then hope they all work around each other somehow?
Yeah, I mean, I can make some predictions. I mean, I did see, and again, this is all just social media commentary, so take it as you will, but that Keith Lee is on the chopping block. I wouldn't be surprised if Shinsuke Nakamura is let go. I wouldn't be, I mean, at this point, Braun Strowman getting released could be anybody.
Anybody that's not a title holder. Right. And that's loosely, I don't know, they could cut Apollo Crews tomorrow and he's the Intercontinental Champion. It does make a difference. Keith Lee seems to be working through some type of issue. It doesn't seem to be an injury. I want to say maybe it's perhaps maybe some mental health stuff that's going on with him. I know Bray is also going through that as well. I'm only speculating. He has sent out tweets, stuff like, you know, time will tell when I can tell you everything, because everybody was saying that maybe he was on the verge of getting released prior to this, you know, whole thing that's going on. It would be a damn shame. The problem is too, and I know, like you just said, AEW is probably like, oh damn, we got a lot of things we could pounce on. You don't want to bloat your roster. You have a lot of homegrown talent that's working for you, and you have your people that are coming in, but you don't want to sign a wave of wrestlers that just got released from WWE, because now it looks like, I mean, unless you're playing some type of crazy invasion, which would be like hella cool if they could do that, but you're going to overload your roster. You've already added on another show with Mark Henry as your announcer now, with Rampage coming up on was it Fridays? AEW Dark Elevation. You don't want to put yourself in a position where now you have all these things, and when you were being praised for your homegrown talent using these guys, now you're becoming WWE light. There are certain people that can't be ignored, though. Dude, you can't ignore or an Aleister Black to me.
No, I don't think so. And I can see the argument to that, especially when you sign Big Show and Mark Henry and Christian, and it's like, oh, they're just doing what WCW did by signing away their talent. But if you look at guys like Braun Strowman's, what, 37? He is a homegrown WWE talent, but like you said, he can't be ignored. But also, when you look at guys like Aleister Black, who made a name for himself as Tommy End before he went to NXT. You know, you look at Buddy Murphy, you look at Ruby Riott. Like, these are people that are still young and still have a lot to offer. So why wouldn't you sign them? You know, like, I don't think they should be looked at as WWE rejects, because they're really not. Like, they went to WWE. They obviously gained more worldwide recognition because you're working for WWE. But they were also something before that. So I don't think it's fair for fans, if they're doing this, to be like, oh, don't be WCW and just sign the WWE guys. Like, no, sign these guys. Bring them in, because people want to see them. Right. And it's different than just signing, you know, like if they were to sign Edge, or if they were to sign Randy Orton, or if they were to sign, like, bring in Kurt Angle for something like that. That's not the same to me as signing Murphy, Ruby Riott, Aleister Black.
No, these are young talents. Yeah, you're right. Made names for themselves elsewhere. I just fear an overloaded roster, because AEW, yeah, with watching Double or Nothing over the weekend, I realized to myself, like, wow, they have a lot of, first of all, they have a lot of quality talent, but there's a lot of guys that are not even being used, yeah, that are on there, that are sometimes get, even JR has said, like, you know, Hangman Page is one of our best guys, but sometimes he gets lost in the shuffle. Like, a guy like Hangman Page, who I think is fantastic, by the way, lost in the shuffle. Imagine if you brought in more of these people. Lana and Ruby Riott would benefit that women's division, because the women's division is a little light, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, even the Iconics, like, I don't know how they haven't reached, I mean, I know they have the 90-day thing or whatever, but how you haven't, yeah, reached out to both of those ladies and said, we need you now. Show up, yeah, on Dynamite on Wednesday, you know? That's it. I mean, listen, I mean, if I want to put a bow on this, and one is, these people are too talented to be ignored, they will find work, whether it's Japan, Impact, ROH, MLW, who's getting their own TV show, you know, NWA, New Japan, and the like, and AEW. Some, they will find work elsewhere. I really hope that if it has another wave of releases, I really don't know what they're going to do with two different shows with two different champions with nobody to fucking wrestle. And if a sale happens, man, a sale happens. I hope it just doesn't kill the business. I hope it doesn't kill them. Honestly, that's what I'm hoping too. But I don't know. You know.
The last thing I'll say about it, I just want to you know, point out just the all these different thoughts that I've been having thinking about it. You know, for a long time, I've been saying that that one thing that WWE could probably do in order to, and you know, and we talked about record profits, and it, you know, that's fine. But one thing they can do in order to kind of maybe bring in some new interest is work with other companies. Finally, there was an announcement. I don't know if WWE officially announced it themselves, but there was an announcement that WWE is looking to work with New Japan.
Yeah.
Which is big, right? That's big. Because Vince McMahon doesn't do things like that.
Right.
Right. So, and the, yes, they have done it in the past. You know, they did work a little bit with ECW. They worked a little bit with AAA, bringing in some of their Mexican stars. You know, Triple H and NXT, they brought in Jushin Liger for that one-off. You know, so that happens. But like a joint partnership with another promotion is big news. And then you hear like, well, all these people getting cut because they want to sell it. And it's just like, oh, man, like this sucks. There is a lot of other alternatives out there. As you said, you meant, you know, we know about AEW, WWE, but we know about Japan. But there is NWA, which has a show that you could watch. There's Impact, which, you know, it's tough to watch, but at least they're getting a little bit more credibility with Kenny Omega being their champion. They're being featured on AEW. You got MLW. Could there be kind of a coming full circle moment here where we start going back to territory days in wrestling?
To be honest with you, my number one reason why Vince is probably going to sell is because he's going to do a third iteration of the XFL.
Oh my God.
I think that's what's happening. you know, that's where it is. I mean, you know, that, I mean, listen, it failed because of the pandemic. The Rock bought this one. So now he's going to make his other XFL to compete against The Rock's XFL. And they're going to do like something. And that's why he's selling it now. He's never going to die until that football shit gets off the ground. That's where it is. But think about this though, too. As we wrap this part up here, but they're officially with the women's tag champ. There is three legitimate women's tag teams on and on both shows. With the loss of Ruby Riott and Lana, because Lana and Naomi were together, Riott Squad were together, Iconics being released, but you still have a Mia Yim who hasn't been on TV. Sonya Deville's an authority figure now. She's not even wrestling anymore. Who knows, man?
Yeah, Yim will probably get cut.
Oh, man. You know what? You're not wrong. You're not wrong. I can see that, man. It's unfortunate. I just hope that if it does, I hope it works out for everybody. I hope, I don't know, maybe they'll resign a bunch of these guys after the fact, but I think it's, you know, you're going to get a lot of disgruntled people, too, that may not want to go back.
Yeah.
You know, you cut me during a pandemic. You cut me to maximize your profits to make you look better. Fuck you. But some of these guys, when they're leaving, seem to be, you know, nice on the way out. Apparently, Ruby Riott was the one that like shook up the roster the most because she was apparently universally liked backstage, and people have been tweeting out like people like Bayley and stuff like that, like just how great of a person she was. That sucks, but yeah, again, she'll land on her feet. Heidi Lovelace, if you guys are familiar with her indie work at all. Anyway, I don't know. I just it's weird to imagine like even getting my son's, you know, my oldest son's into wrestling. And my youngest son, you know, whatever he could hold his attention, he'll watch it occasionally. But I can't think of a time where wrestling wasn't in my life. And imagine it not being there anymore. Now, AEW, now I'm talking about WWE specifically, not WCW. You know what I mean? I can't imagine that. I mean, and, you know, I'm probably wrong. Hopefully I am. But this is crazy.
It is.
To even fathom. But off of WWE, or to continue on WWE, let's say. Did you get a chance to watch the Ultimate Warrior A&E biography and the Ultimate Warrior Dark Side of the Ring?
I did.
Okay, so I watched the Ultimate Warrior A&E special when it aired.
Me too.
Dark Side of the Ring, I've had to watch in patches because I just cannot stay up at all. I don't know. what did you initial thoughts of both? What did you think?
So, I think I enjoyed the biography piece a little bit better than Dark Side. I actually felt that the biography part or A&E's documentary was a little bit more controversial than Dark Side's. You know, I think, and apparently AEW switched, AEW, A&E switched their program schedule to make sure that theirs came out before the Dark Side of the Ring episode did. I know everybody called the Macho Man one a hit piece, and I don't, if you're going to call Macho Man a hit piece, which I don't agree on, that's what it is, then I don't see how Ultimate Warriors is any different. I mean, I think they talked about a lot about his life before wrestling, you know, him being a bodybuilder when he met Sting, how they got together. And then it quickly just went into how he changed as a person and just became the biggest asshole that nobody ever wanted to deal with. I think the most controversial part is obviously his conservative speeches that he was giving, especially the one that they showed at UConn in 2005, where he went there and said the things that he was saying, and it turned into a big back and forth with him and the kids that were in the auditorium there. You know, they were yelling at each other, they were cursing at each other. Now, on the biography one on A&E, what it looked like to me, because again, that was the first one that was aired, so that's the first one we watched, because they talked to Dana Warrior, his wife, because she was on there. She said that she was disappointed when he did that. And she said that his conservative outlook was him listening to Rush Limbaugh and other conservative things to as a way to, like, it was just something for him to do. Like he was kind of looking for something, like the next part of his life, and this is what he got into. And she expressed disappointment with him, and then after that, things kind of changed. That's what I took from it. Dark Side of the Ring airs out of Ultimate Warrior's mouth himself, when he starts going on these, you know, these countrywide public speaking events, says that his new wife is the one that made him realize that he's a conservative.
Right.
Now I listened to Jim Cornette talk about this, and Jim Cornette decided to read some of the blogs that Ultimate Warrior had written.
Wait, by the way, I don't mean to cut you off, but how great was his introduction when he's like, "Hi, I'm Jim Cornette, and I wasn't a big fan of The Ultimate Warrior." I thought that was
he
got to get in the shot. Anyway, go ahead.
Things that Warrior had written about Hurricane Katrina victims, things that he wrote about gay people, things that he wrote about other races, some really disgusting stuff, really disgusting. And this isn't speculation. This is stuff that he wrote. It was fact that he wrote these things and said these things. So at the end of it, I was like, man, like, people are allowed to have their points of view. I think you can be a conservative and not be a piece of shit. That's my opinion. But it's disappointing to hear that he believed in these things so much. Because at the end of the day, you're talking about human beings. So I think that was all the controversial part that I guess we didn't really know about with Ultimate Warrior. Everything else we knew about, him holding Vince up, wrestlers not liking him, we all knew about that stuff. But one thing I didn't know was that he wrote Vince a letter around the time he held him up at SummerSlam 91, where he was like, you know, "I want equal pay, I want everything equal to Hogan." And Vince wrote him a letter saying, "You're not Hogan." And apparently that messed with him very, very deeply, because he didn't have his father in his life. He didn't have like a male figure to look up to. And he's somebody who clearly needed that in his life. He needed a male figure. I kind of get tired of this kind of outlook that certain people have, where if you don't have a male role model, you're going to turn out to be a terrible person. I don't like that, because I don't think that that's true. But Ultimate Warrior was clearly somebody who needed that male figure to look up to, and Vince McMahon was that.
Well, he was lacking a father figure his entire life, they pointed out, right?
Right, they pointed that out, yeah.
Vince is that.
I only say that because I think you can be raised by a single parent, whether it be your mother and father, and still turn out to be a decent human being.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So...
It's stuff that goes deeper than that. You know, it's not the fact that you're missing something. It's a bunch of things that people tend to sum up in one thing.
Right, you know? Exactly.
And the fact when they tell Vince, like, did you see him as, like, a father? Did you see it as a father-son relationship? And he was just like, no.
No. Yeah, he said no.
Maybe Warrior saw me as a father figure, but no, I didn't see it like that. I thought we were close, you know.
Right.
You know. But yeah, go ahead.
No, apparently that really, according to what we watched, that messed up Warrior pretty bad. Like, because he looked at Vince that way, and Vince didn't look at him back the same way. And I guess that is what led to him being like this kind of off the wall personality. So yeah, I think just, you know, we watched the biography part to see what they would say, and then of course we tuned into Dark Side to see what stuff they would say that would be controversial. And the biggest controversy was just his opinions politically and socially. And I don't know, I mean, in today's culture, he would probably be somebody that a lot of people would want to ignore and forget about.
He probably would have been canceled already.
Yeah, he would have been canceled.
It's the fact that we tend to elevate people after they pass away.
Right.
Legendary statuses, you know, almost mythical type proportions, especially a character like the Ultimate Warrior because of what he was to people when they were kids. If he was still alive today and this stuff would resurface, he would definitely be a part of, probably be a victim of cancel culture, which, you know, probably rightfully so. You know, and that's the issue with, so I used to follow a lot of, I never actually read the Warrior's blog, but I would read like the articles that commented on Warrior's blog, like what he wrote this week or speaking engagement. So I was aware of the UConn incident. I never saw the video, which I saw in the biography, which I thought was great that they added that. And I read a few of his posts, like that they had included, like the excerpts, never anything full.
Right.
So I knew the type of person he was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love the Ultimate Warrior character. I think Jim Hellwig is not a great person, right?
Right.
I think there's the distinction between the two. I think the two, which I found weird, is the distinction is that Darkseid had his first wife, and the biography had his second wife, right? You know, being a warrior. Here's the problem I had with this. So I didn't get a chance. I still haven't yet to finish the Macho Man thing because I've heard people just really just crap all over it. It's hard to get through just in general, but the Ultimate Warrior piece, what for the most part, didn't pull no punches. They did speak about, because I didn't think they were going to do that. They did speak about the blog post and the speaking engagements and stuff like that. So I was surprised they did that, and I was actually like, wow, you know, good for them that they allowed that to be included. You know, and the way and just the way you said it too, the way Dana Warner kind of spun it was like he was influenced by these Fox News radio pundits, like, all these conservatives, whatever, and The way I took it was that he wasn't really, the way she spins it is like he wasn't really conservative. This is what he was listening to, and this is how he made money doing his speaking engagement. So that's what he did. And when he did the thing at UConn, oh, I was disappointed in him. And he was like, almost like she claims he was like, I messed up.
Yeah.
So to me, it was almost like another character, almost like a heel Ultimate Warrior. I'm serious. Like, I'm not, like, that's how I took it when I first watched it. I was like, so. I remember, because everybody in my family is asleep when I'm watching this. In my head, I'm like, oh, so he went heel. legitimately, like, from a wrestling standpoint, like, it felt like the way his wife spun it was like, that was just another character that he was doing. Because then you hear about all these different things he's trying to do, the comic book and all these things, and trying to
you know,
what the fuck that was. Yeah, whatever the fuck he was trying to do, right? And, but, you know, it seems like, oh, yeah, he did all this stuff, but then... at the very end, and then the self-destruction of Ultimate Warrior really hurt him.
Yeah.
And then he got into the Hall of Fame, and then, it all went away, right? He wasn't a conservative. Like, they just make it seem like everything he said he was apologetic for, everybody forgave him, he forgave WWE, and then he got into the Hall of Fame, he passed away. That's how I felt it was, like, at towards the end. It felt a little sanitized at the end. Like, this wasn't a conflicted guy. He had his beliefs. He's a great family man. He made amends with everybody. And then he died. That's how I feel at the end of that. Then you look at Darkseid, and Darkseid's like, no, this guy's a piece of shit. Like, no, he's not. Like, no, he was concerned. And then, like what you just said, right? You know, Dana Warner, like, to me, I took it as she was, like, almost like he was influenced, trying to spin it in, like, this was a character he was portraying. But then he said, oh, I met my wife, Dana, and I realized I was a conservative. So, yeah, you kind of tugging the strings behind there, you know. And you could also see why maybe Dana wasn't a part of Darkseid, or didn't want nothing to do with the Darkseid of the Ring thing, because they probably would have brought that up.
Yeah.
You know? I feel like a lot of it, the same thing, kind of like tread the same familiar territory. Yeah, met Sting, Blade Runners, World Class. I was a Dingo Warrior. The Dingo Warrior name fucking sucks. Vince changed it. You know, all this other stuff. It was the after the fact, though, winning the world title. The wife realized he was like cheating on her with various women in multiple cities, and that he was very like, she kept pointing out how like he was just like a, because like Jake Roberts and Heenan hated him.
Yeah.
Jake Roberts said how dangerous he was in the ring, but the wife had said like a lot of it stemmed from his like his own insecurities or something like that. He was very insecure because he used to be like a very skinny kid. Now he became a bodybuilder and all this other stuff. And I just thought that it was like, I don't know, insecure about in the ring, so you're fucking dangerous and injuring people. I don't know, you know, like, you know, I don't know, whatever. You know, and also too, like, she talks about how the Ultimate Warrior character started to consume him.
Yeah.
Which it seems like she says, Jim left, but the Ultimate Warrior came home or something like that. I think she says, he wins the title, you know? But then, like, was he over as hell? And you also don't realize, too, that the Ultimate Warrior run is about, what, like a 5-6 year run? And then that's it? Like, legitimately?
If that, I mean, it's, and maybe even combined. Like, you know, and I forget who it was. It was said a few times that he was just a moment in time. And he really was. He was just a moment in time. Yeah, he was huge. Yeah, absolutely.
But to demand the same money as Hulk Hogan, you know, and then Vince, like, you're a legend in your own mind, you know, stuff like that. Like, and then you even see, even on the A&E biography, he says the same thing in the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior thing. He's like, when he came backstage after the match, as someone said, anyone's like, I cannot wait to fire him. Like, that's severe shit, like, that you're feeling that way. But even then, like, talking about what I like to, that they interview, like, guys like Jim Ross and Cornette. So they were like the underlings at the time in that little Vince inner circle, so to speak. And like, Jim Ross says, like, you know, they sent me out to meet him in 96. And he was like, it was a complete waste of time. He was the same guy. And that's when he starts talking about, Destrucity and all this other garbage. And I never noticed, too, that he was going to start a feud with Jerry Lawler. And he came out wearing a baseball cap. And they were all like, why the fuck would you wear a baseball cap?
And they said
he was afraid to take the shot
with the glass, yeah.
But it's like, you're ruining it. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? You know, stuff like that. But I think for me too, like, the public rants and the speeches and a lot of the insensitive stuff, and like, it's all just incredibly racist, homophobic. Like, he wouldn't, you know, I remember in the whole thing, he's like, I signed as an ambassador in a multi-year deal. He would have never made it through that deal. He'd be gone right now, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and especially today's culture, like, no one's going to let that slide. You're going to find those videos. They're everywhere. His blogs, I think, are still online. You know, like, I don't know if they've actually taken that down. You know, it was crazy. I mean, I did like this, like, at the Hall of Fame, how Jake the Snake was like, Warrior came up to him and apologized. Yeah. And, like, he was taken aback by the apology. So, like, yeah, okay, you know, making amends to an extent, but then, like, does that make up for the person that he's been or still was at the time? We don't know. Because, again, like, WWE puts him in the Hall of Fame, and the fact that he dies 2 days later after making, like, pretty much his own eulogy in the middle of the ring on Monday Night Raw, or 3 days later, whatever, it is crazy. And then they put the Warrior Award every year in the Hall of Fame that goes to a deserving person, which is not what he said, by the way, if you actually see his actual Hall of Fame speech. He was talking about, he was throwing people behind the scenes, backstage people, that they actually finally honored one person this year. The Warrior Award, you know, his family's still involved with WWE, and they've made a statue of him. They're doing A&E biographies. They redid another autobiography or doc for him.
Yeah.
You know, like, they highlight him so much as he's part of this, like, great wrestling tradition. But in reality, he probably sucked as a person. Great father, it seems like. But, you know, and then you hear these other stories too from these, like, indie guys in Europe. And this wasn't included on the thing, but, like, he went to Europe for a show, and he demanded that the promoter, one, that he was on the main event, two, that he won the championship at the end. And they said that he was so bad that he ran down to the ring. And by the time he did his entrance, he was completely blown up. The match was horrible. He won in very, very short time. And he walked away with the championship, said, give me my check, and took off with the belt. Like, you know, stuff like that. Like,
Oh,
it was
God.
very conflicted. There were some similarities in both. I thought the A&E biography, I'm glad that they didn't pull no punches. For the most part, I felt at the end it was just very a little sanitized at the end, which is kind of like, hey, he made amends, everything's fine, but then he passed, unfortunately. And you know, that's not to take, because those are two girls that lost their father, and that's not to take anything from that, because I'm sure they were devastated. But you know, everyone was talking about how Macho Man's was a hit piece, and this one seemed fairly balanced, I think, until the end. The Dark Side of the Ring. You know what the problem with it is? That the name of the show is Dark Side of the Ring. So you always expect something.
You always expect negative. Something, yeah. Yeah.
You know, absolutely. What I mean? So I think the title, and I think, like, I don't know, I get what they're trying to do with that. Like, this is the stuff you don't see on TV and everything that happens behind the scenes. But it's like, the title always has negative connotations. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I heard Ultimate Warrior, I'm like, oh, dude, they're going to go in on, it's going to be Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I didn't get that vibe, but I was glad that there were certain people that were able to speak on it. You know, your JRs and your Cornettes. You know, they had like little excerpts from Heenan before he passed and other stuff. I think Andre the Giant's probably the best judge of character, because he didn't like Macho Man either. So
no, he didn't like Macho Man.
Right. So he didn't like Warrior.
He didn't like Warrior. He didn't like Macho Man, so
right. So I mean, I don't know.
But does this, as a wrestling fan, does this hurt the legacy of the Warrior?
I think for people that are just being introduced to the Warrior for the first time, since they push him so much, like my son, who says, like, he loves the face paint. He loves that he runs to the ring. He loves the music. He's like, oh, Ultimate Warrior. Like, you know, he always asks me stuff like, who did this wrestler beat? Who did he beat? I think, like, when he gets old enough, I'm going to have to tell him, like, this is who he was in the ring, but outside of the ring, this is the guy he was. This is the man he was here. So you choose whether you still want to watch matches from him. And, you know, like, I could watch an Ultimate Warrior match. It doesn't bother me. But I'm not going to, you know, be like, Jim Hellwig was a hell of a guy. Like, you know, like, that's not who I am, you know. I think, does it tarnish it? I think WWE is doing a good job of elevating him to this, like I said, like this mythic status. And the fact that, unfortunately, he did pass away, and he's not alive today to maybe stick his foot in his mouth or get caught up in this cancel culture thing that we're doing nowadays, I think benefits his family. You know what I mean? So I think his legacy is okay. Unlike maybe like a Fabulous Moolah, who they had that severe backlash for when they named the Battle Royal after her. So I don't think he's tarnished. I do want to go back, now that we've mentioned like this Warrior Dark Side of this, I do want to go back and watch the Macho Man Dark Side to the A&E biography and maybe do a
comparison.
Do a side by side with that as well. Cause I'm really interested now. I thought it was like Kismet, right? As they say, like, to have both of these things in the same week air. And I was like, oh shit, this is gonna be cool. Like, I would like to see the A&E for Macho, since that, you know, people keep saying how it's like it was a hit piece and everything like that, compare it to their Dark Side also. I thought both were good. They both had their faults, but you can't gloss over that shit. You have to talk about it, you know. Anyway.
So who's next on Dark Side? I think it's Grizzly Smith, right?
It's a they're doing Grizzly Smith and Dynamite Kid to wrap up this half of the season. Grizzly Smith, if you guys aren't familiar, you need to go back to Beyond the Mat documentary and watch Jake the Snake Roberts' part in Doc and Beyond the Mat to tell you. You want to talk about a guy like Grizzly Smith in terms of bad person? I mean, this is a guy who was working in creative in WCW. He was an agent backstage. He was fairly well liked and would rape his daughters and stuff like that and sexually abuse them. And Jake the Snake's family, Sam Houston, who used to wrestle for WWE, Rockin' Robin, who was a former WWF women's champion, they're all going to be there. The whole family will be on that Dark Side, which is, I think, is an incredible. They got the whole family. I'd love to really see that. The Dynamite Kid one, I mean, who did he not influence, right? Cruiserweight wrestling exists probably because of Dynamite Kid and Tiger Mask, right? Let's be real. You know, and to see, like, you know, Benoit, Eddie, Jericho, you know, and then Jericho, I think, is on that episode to speak about that, Hart family and stuff like that. I'm really interested in. I'm really interested. The second half of the season is going to have the plane ride from hell.
Yep.
And I am in totally in on that. I mean, because how do you make that into a whole episode? And listening to the creators of Dark Side of the Ring, they were like, no, we got some. And they were able to get a lot of the, because, you know, a lot of them are gone, you know, from the company. So they're able to talk, which is great. So I'm looking forward to that too, man. That's gonna be a good one. So hopefully that's something we can look forward to. I think if I'm correct, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, but they're gonna do a whole episode on FMW.
Yep.
Which is if you're familiar with that, Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling, most notably Hayabusa.
Hayabusa, my favorite.
So if you want to talk about deathmatch wrestling, FMW was doing some crazy shit with like wrestlers versus like actual martial artists. And stuff like that. I don't even know if that's a thing, martial artist. But anyway, I think also Luna Vachon is going to be one of them.
Really?
Yeah, I'm trying to look up a thing now. Oh, here we go. So I got it here. The WWF steroid trial back in
92. Yeah, that I knew about.
FMW, as I said, Luna Vachon, The Plane Ride from Hell. XPW, Extreme Pro Wrestling. Bruiser Bedlam, who Jim Cornette apparently made a specific request to have him, like he was a wrestler in the ring, but also was like tied to these biker gangs that were robbing banks and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And a whole episode on Chris Canyon, which I think is going to be incredible as well. Yeah. If you really want to hear like a nice episode on Chris Canyon, if you go to Talk Is Jericho, he did a roundtable with DDP, Shane Helms, and oh my God, his name is going to escape me, but it was current executive from AEW who actually grew up with Chris Canyon. They were best friends. That's a great companion piece to listen to.
Yeah, that should be interesting because Chris Canyon obviously was, you know, for those who don't, maybe it's not obvious, but for those who don't know, was a gay man. And, you know, gay men are not unheard of in wrestling. Pat Patterson was a gay man, but Pat Patterson didn't come out until much, much later in his life and career because of his own fears. And Chris Canyon, from what I remember hearing, was somebody who was kind of tormented for being gay.
Right.
So
I mean,
it's going to be interested to see who's on it and who talks about that.
And when you mean tormented, I'm guessing inner conflict of whether to come out to him.
No, I mean people tormenting him because
really,
they, that's yeah.
Interesting to hear. I also know Matt and Nick Jackson, the Young Bucks, were influenced by him early. They actually worked with him a lot. They became really good friends. I think they're going to appear in the episode as well.
Okay.
So that's something to look forward to, honestly.
Yeah, but I remember hearing a story about, I think when he was in WCW and people were kind of, you know, like ragging on him, saying things kind of behind his back. And he said that the only one to ever go up to him and ask him flat out was Raven. Like Raven just went up to him one day and was like, hey, are you gay? Yeah. Like he didn't use the word gay. He used another word, but that should be interesting to see how homosexuality is talked about in the wrestling business.
Well, you see guys like Darren Young who came out.
Darren Young came out, yeah.
And mm-hmm. how genuinely accepted he was by everybody, you know, by the roster and everything. And
the way it should be.
Bret Hart had said something how wrestling locker rooms are usually fairly more progressive than any either sports entertainment or pro sports in general. Because they were talking about how like players from the NFL wait until they retire to come out after the fact because of the possible ridicule and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, and that was great that Darren Young didn't have to experience that, what Chris Canyon experienced, you know. And another,
allegedly.
Right. And another, which is, I think, crazy, is like how innovative he was on his like wrestling offense, especially when
he was fun
like,
to
every
watch.
Time you saw Mortis, you would see like all these different moves. And Jericho goes on record a bunch of times too that says he would have been a great trainer in NXT or in AEW. They would have been benefit. Like he was like, if he could have just held on for a few more years, I think he would have been in a better place having all these companies to maybe work with and train these guys, which, you know, there's always these stories, right? These what ifs, but it's pretty crazy. So I look forward to that. This is a very long season, right? This is what, 14 episodes. So it's going to be first half ends with Dynamite, and then you're going to have your second half later on in the year. Pretty cool.
We got the final biography episode coming up Sunday. It's Bret Hart.
That's my guy. I'm gonna have to watch that. I heard the Mick Foley. I was busy watching Double or Nothing when it aired.
It was good.
I heard it's fantastic. I heard it was really good.
Yeah.
which was great. I heard a lot of people, JR, Mick Foley himself, they were very pleased with it. They really liked it. So it's Mick Foley, man. He's like a universally liked person. How have you ever mad at Mick Foley? You know what I mean? Like
Mick Foley, I mean, I know I told you, probably mentioned it on this podcast before, but I had the pleasure of meeting him when I was writing for a website and got to go to Comic-Con and just saw him, and he was sitting in a row behind me in an auditorium at the Jacob Javits Center by himself. And I thought to myself, should I leave it alone or should I say something? So I got up, walked over to him, and he saw me coming, stuck out his hand, shook my hand. I said, it's a pleasure to meet you. I just wanted to come over and just say hi. And he was like, yeah, sure. And then as I went to walk away, he actually started talking to me. And I just thought, wow, what a cool guy. You know, so.
That's great because they always say, like, never meet your heroes. You know? And you always see, like, these articles, like, on BuzzFeed where, like, people share, like, oh, I met this celebrity one time and they were total dicks. And, like, you know. So, like, that's great when you meet those guys and they're, like, really cool as shit or lord ladies. I've only ever met the Big Show, and we saw Jimmy Snuka from afar one time. I've never actually seen. Oh, you know what? I'm lying. Darren Drozdoff, incredible guy, super nice.
Yeah.
He was at Sports Fest on Staten Island. He posed for a picture. He was cool as shit. And Too Cold Scorpio.
Okay.
Cool as hell. He was Flash Funk at the time. He was there too the same night. Met those two guys. I took their pictures with a disposable camera, and my stepdad threw it out. Never got those pictures. Thank you, Big E, wherever you are. Thank you so much for that. So cool as hell, though. But those, I've only met maybe like a handful of wrestlers in my time. I've never met a whole bunch. But you know what? I think I like it better that way. Better on TV. I don't want to like elevate their character and I meet them. I'm like, oh, you suck. But
yeah, I mean, Mick Foley's really the only one that I've ever like had casual conversation with. But also part of my time at Comic-Con, what I was doing there, I got to be on the AEW press room, and I spoke to John Moxley, Chris Jericho, Brandi Rhodes, Jungle Boy, Nyla Rose, and they were all just nice and professional, and Jericho especially, like he was very open to answering people's questions. He answered my question, like it was just fun to be there, and I know they were doing a job, but at the same time, like they didn't have to. Not everybody's always nice about that stuff, and they were. Even John Moxley, like, he made a point to talk about how WWE sucks, of course, but, you know, he was cool to talk to, so it was
always fun experience. Always got to sneak in the jab at WWE, Mox, huh? you know, speaking of which, now that we're on the subject of AEW, did you get a chance to check out Double or Nothing over the weekend?
So my weekend was very busy, actually. Last Thursday was my girlfriend's birthday, and we went to the Yankee game, and then from there left to North Carolina.
Did you leave directly from the Yankee game?
Like maybe 4 hours later.
Oh wow, that's badass.
Yeah, right. We came home and then left for North Carolina around 2 a.m. because it's about a six and a half hour drive, and went there for my brother's wedding because my brother lives down there, and then got home Sunday night around 11:20. So I watched the Mick Foley biography the next day, and I didn't watch Double or Nothing, but I did watch today on YouTube. There was like a really long highlight video highlighting the whole card. So I watched that. So I got to see like a shortened version of the pay-per-view.
I'm not going to go through the whole pay-per-view. I'm just going to give you just some snapshots for me. I actually enjoyed the Young Bucks match against Eddie Kingston and Moxley. It was not your typical. I expected a spot fest, and I didn't get that. I thought I saw a different side of the Bucks, a little bit more vicious, attacking limbs. They really embracing the heel turn. So kudos to them, because I thought it was a very, very good match. But I thought the theme of the night was like really good match and like an ending to the matches. So like that match in particular didn't have a particularly strong ending. I thought the ending was good, but not on par with what the match was. I thought the buy-in, what is the name of the Battle Royal?
The
Casino Battle Royal. There you go.
Yeah.
The concept of using the cards and drawing people out five at a time is cool.
It's cool.
But they need to explain like how the suits get picked. Because it was just like, we shuffled the deck and this is who came out first. And it was like the spades. And here are the five people. You know? Like, it'd be cool to see who's in the Casino Battle Royal pull out from the deck of cards. Like, oh, I got a spade. I got a heart. I got a diamond. All right, you're in these suits. Here are the guys. Where are they going to pop in throughout the night? You know, and then you had your Joker card. You know, you don't know who that is.
I do like the Joker card concept, and that, you know, it's a mystery participant. And it did, you know, like you said, Leo Rush, who apparently didn't sign there. It was like a handshake deal because he's in Japan with New Japan. But I like that. Yeah.
He's working three companies at once, MLW, AEW, and New Japan right now. I think the deal is going to allow him to do each. So you probably won't see him every week. But it was cool. But I think they need to explain more. I also think it went a little bit too long. And it's also very weird, too, when, like, you have people fighting, then they have a countdown. Then instead of showing the screen where the deck is being pulled out, you're showing the ring, showing the screen, and then you're playing people's music. But as people's music is coming in and they're coming into the entranceway, people are getting eliminated. And that's one of the problems you have with the Royal Rumble, too, is people are coming in and you miss the eliminations. Which I think they, you know, at one point was like, oh, did Will Hobbs get eliminated, and no one had any, not even the announcers. Big Show was like, did he get eliminated? I don't know. Which, by the way, he's horrible in commentary. It was cool. I thought Christian was winning that, hands down. Jungle Boy is over as fuck, by the way. That the theme song itself, like, people are singing in the crowd. It was great to see a full crowd.
Yeah.
Jungle Boy is over as all hell, though. And that's great that he's getting a title match against Omega in 2 weeks. Miro's my guy. I love him. But again, it was a solid match. The ending, the shenanigans. Jake Roberts tries to run out with the snake bag. He throws it over. You know, he got him in the accolade, and the referee didn't wait to see if Archer was really out before he rang the bell to say he was out. You know, little sloppy things like that. To me, the women's title match was the best match on the card. Hikaru Shida and Britt Baker tore it up. I thought they were great. Britt Baker went over like she should. She earned the title. I think she deserved it. Shida was a great champion. Mm-hmm. Fantastic champion. I'm glad that they changed the AEW Women's Championship to a bigger centerpiece, because the original one was horrible.
Yeah, it was very small.
Yeah, it was way too small. It was, and if you if you guys get a chance to see on the buy-in pre-show, Serena Deeb and Riho had a good match as well. The women tore it up that night. I thought the women AEW women's title match was the best match on the show. I thought they did an incredible job. The only thing I wish they would have did was they would have just held, if Britt would have held the lockjaw just a little longer before she'd have tapped out. But that's just nitpicking. I thought the match was great. And then you want to talk about Mania being long. This shit didn't end until well after midnight. Triple threat match, I enjoyed a great deal. But again, the ending, just shenanigans for shenanigans' sake. You know, you had Pac, Orange Cassidy, Kenny Omega. I thought the match was very good. Way, way, way too many near falls. Way too many times I was like, oh, this is over. Kick out of two. Oh, this is over. Kick out of two. It's way too many. The ending, so, you know, he has every champion. He's a AAA champion. He's the Impact champion. He's AEW champion. And he knocked out each of them with a different belt. Pretty cool, you know, that they did, you know, whatever. But then, you know, Orange Cassidy comes out. He hits him with the Orange Punch, which is his finish, which should be a finish. Right. Don Callis is there. So instead of Orange Cassidy trying to pin him, maybe Don Callis interfering, because, you know, Kenny Omega just hits the ref at one point, just to hit the ref, whatever. he practically no-sells the finish and rolls him up in a crucifix with a 1-2-3. So you just got hit with his finish. You're not knocked out. You're playing, you decoy, pretty much, you know, whatever, and then you roll him up. So it's like, okay, so that finish means shit. That's how I took it anyway. The match was good up until the ending. I thought Stadium Stampede was a fucking lot of fun. It was cool as shit. The entrance of the Inner Circle, they fucking came down from the
scoreboard. Yeah.
Conan being there, making the appearance with LAX from the Impact days, Santana and Ortiz. I'm all in on the Inner Circle now, by the way. I think Sammy Guevara is going to be a star. I think he is a star. The only person that, Hager, I'm not a huge fan of. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. Didn't like Swagger, don't like him now. Jericho is fucking timeless. And I love Santana Ortiz, just two badass New York dudes kicking ass. And the Pinnacle was great as well. I was shocked that it ended with Guevara and Shawn Spears as opposed to MJF and Jericho. But I think Jericho with the elbow issue, that's why they probably did that. But it was great. So it was really, really good. I thought the whole pay-per-view as a whole was really good. Below great, though. The ending, that they need to work on their finishing. I just feel like a lot of the times it's a lot of shenanigans for shenanigans' sake. You know, I'm going to knock out the ref. I'm going to hit you with a different belt. Then I'm going to get hit with your finish, but I'm not going to, you know, but I'm going to roll you up and no sell the finish. It's like, dude, then that's not your finish.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's just a move.
What do you think of MJF? I mean, there are people that I speak to that think that MJF is the best thing going in wrestling right now. He's the best heel. And I think he's definitely fun. However, to play, you know, devil's advocate with him a little bit, he reminds me, first of all, he reminds me of The Miz.
Oh. You know,
yeah, he does. Just like his attitude reminds me a little bit of The Miz. He's The Miz who can curse a lot. Like, that's what he does.
Mm.
So, like, there's something that I can't help but get out of my head when I think of MJF is, yes, he's fun and he's a good heel. But he's a good heel because he walks down the ring and tells everybody to go fuck themselves. He's a heel because he cuts a promo and calls everybody a piece of shit all the time. And I go back to Shane Douglas in ECW, who's kind of the same way, right? He would come out and cut promos about how Ric Flair fucking sucked and Shawn Michaels is a pussy and all these things. And then when he would go to do other things, Shane Douglas, nobody cared about Shane Douglas anymore.
Right.
And I remember Shawn Michaels talking about that and saying that he felt the only reason why Shane Douglas was even over in ECW is because he was allowed to come out and curse and say what he wanted.
Right.
Do you see that?
Situations?
Right.
Okay.
But yeah, when he's put in another situation, he's not as entertaining. Do you see that for MJF? Like if MJF was in WWE and obviously he can't curse, would he still be as effective?
Yeah, because I think if they – you would have to sanitize the language, obviously, right? But
right.
I think he's one of the rare people that is living the gimmick because he's a heel on Twitter. He's a heel when you meet him in real life. You know, he's not one of those guys like, hey, man, let me get – because like there are videos of him like – somebody's like, hey, can I get an autograph? And he fucking smacks the picture away and keeps walking. Like, yo, he's living the gimmick. And that's dope because no one does that anymore. So with that respect, I think he is one of the best heels in terms of that because he is constantly a heel 24/7. He's never like, hi, guys, my name is Max. Nice to meet everybody. Like, no, he's like, hey, go fuck yourself. I'm out. You know? Yeah. So, yeah, he gets to curse a lot and stuff like that. Right. He has yet, though, with the exception of Stadium Stampede and I enjoy Blood and Guts up until the end sequence, and we've talked about that. But he has yet to give me a match where I'm like, shit, he has everything. You get what I'm saying? Like, I think he's a great wrestler. I think he's very solid. But he has yet to give me that performance where I'm like, yo, this kid has everything. Because he could cut a great promo, even without the cursing. I think he cut a great promo. And he is a good heel. But he has yet to give me that match where I'm like, fuck, this dude's going to be a star. You know what I mean? I think he will be. If all the stars align correctly, which they are right now for him, he will be AEW champion one day. Mm-hmm. I think he's still very new. Like, I wouldn't strap the rocket to him just yet. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that it remains to be seen here. I already think, though, and this may be kind of bold to say, but I already think he's better than Shane Douglas in some respects. Because the problem with Shane Douglas is that, we've heard this a million times, ECW, how great ECW was in, like, accentuating your positives and hiding your negatives. He was a good wrestler. He could cut a promo, but when he was put in other scenarios, he could never deliver. And he would go on to blame it that because all these people didn't want to work with him because of the things he said previously, like Flair and all these other people. And he had a great idea for the Dean Douglas character that they all liked, but then they did it because of it. It's always everybody else's fault. You know what I'm saying? So that's where I kind of draw the line with Shane Douglas. I think MJF has a lot more upside and a lot more potential than Shane Douglas probably ever did in his career. I don't know. Fight me at Wrestling Guys PC. But I agree. Yeah, I just think is he the best thing going today? No, but I think he is a great heel, and I think he has a lot of upside. I think I would love to see him. Like, I think the whole diamond ring crap is cool for him.
Right.
But, like, the thing as a whole is I don't think it's going to end up working. You need to make it another title or get rid of it.
It's like that Battle Bowl ring stuff.
Right, stupid. Like, oh, I have the ring. Like, stop trying to do old school WCW shit. Like, the Battle Bowl ring wasn't popular then. Right. It's not popular now. So, like, the ring eventually is going to have to become a title or something else.
Yeah.
I could see him definitely rocking that TNT championship for a while. And then possibly moving up, you know, to that world title status for sure.
So now, are they leaving TNT to go to TBS?
Yeah, eventually. Yeah.
So does it become the TBS title?
Oh, that's a good question.
I mean, it would make sense, right? It sounds stupid, but it would make sense.
Let's tweet Tony Khan and Cody Rhodes and ask him, like, are you going to change the name from TNT to TBS? Because that makes sense.
It makes sense.
Or maybe not call it that. Maybe just call it the fucking AEW TV title.
There you go. I wouldn't mind that. I mean, TNT, I get they're trying to be different. I get what they were doing with it, and it's fine. It sounds okay. But, like, the TBS championship, I'm not on board with that. I think that sounds silly.
No, no, not at all. So, change it to the TV
championship. Yeah, change it to the TV championship.
I always loved it. I always loved the WCW TV championship. I'm not going to lie. So
yeah, I was a fan of that title.
But how are you going to stand out from the rest? TV title is fine, right? The ring, yeah. We already made the connotations to Battle Bowl, Blood and Guts, which is War Games. You know, what are you going to do? AW, what are you going to do that makes you stand away? Like, I think Stadium Stampede is a fucking great concept. I think it's a good idea. I think the Casino Battle Royal is a good idea. It just needs some tweaks. Like, how are you going to stand out from the other companies? You have those two matches. You need to have something else that we're like, oh, shit, AW does this thing. Like as weird as it sounds, but Impact used to have the Ultimate X match, which when you see it, it's like fucking you're crossing a rope to grab a giant X or a title.
Those matches were exciting.
But exactly, right? What are you going to do to, you know, the King of the Mountain match was stupid as fuck, but it was their own creation. You know, like climb a ladder to put the belt on
and then just take it off and say.
Yeah, like, you know, like, okay, great. The penalty box thing, right? Or the reverse battle royal where you started outside and worked your way in. You know, like, you know what? Say what you want. At least they tried to come up.
They tried to be different,
But
I liked Full Metal Mayhem. Right? And,
Or the Six Sides of Steel, like, which was essentially
Monsters Ball matches that they did.
Right, or like those were fun. Orange House of Fun that Raven used to do, or you know, or you could do something like TNA Lockdown, where every single match is a cage match, which was who the fuck wanted to do that, but they did. You know, they tried.
They tried.
You know, so you know, like they're gonna have to do some more stuff. Like you have two in your back pocket now. You have that Battle Royal, and you have that Stadium Stampede, which you know. Tony Khan, Jacksonville Jaguars, you can use that whenever the hell you want. But, you know, as a culminating thing. So I think they need something else. Not that it's missing. I mean, it's just something that makes them stand out a little more. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong here. Let us know. I Wrestling Guys PC. A lot of stuff we went through. A lot of stuff. We had to get it out. A lot of stuff. But
It's been a couple of weeks, and there's been a lot going on, and it was a lot to talk about. But don't forget that we did drop our underrated rivalries, the first episode, Bret Hart versus Diesel. And that was a lot of fun to do, and there's more of those to come. I already got a bunch of rivalries in my head that I hope we get to touch on. So don't forget to listen to that, subscribe, and stay connected with us through our social media.
Yeah, I mean, this is at Wrestling Guys PC as usual. Hope you enjoy. And you got to throw some ideas out there, too. We do, like we said, we were going through underrated rivalries and be like, yo, Bret and Diesel right off the bat, but what are some that you feel like, and it doesn't have to be WWE necessarily too.
No, it can be anything.
Anything, WCW, whatever. I don't really care. Just send it our way because I'm very interested.
How about
some stuff?
Sting versus Vader.
There you go.
They had a huge rivalry in WCW.
You know, I absolutely love WCW Vader. Probably one of my favorite, probably top three in terms of like my favorite big men of all time.
Yeah, WCW Vader was great.
My son saw the figure the other day. They had the big special edition one that has like all the different things. And he's like, Dad, look, it's Vader. I'm like, oh, I'm trying to convince him to let me buy it for him just so we could have it. Because I want to buy it for myself. I was like, you want to get Vader? Vader's right there. You want to get it? He's like, no, I'm going to take this Peppa Pig. I'm like, who the fuck wants this? Get the Vader. The Vader's cool. And
just buy it.
He didn't want the Vader. I'm just going to buy it for myself. I'm good. Whatever. Who cares? You know what? I think that's great. I think maybe we should cover that next. I think they have a nice storied history. It actually, talk about Battle Bowl, one of their matches at the end of the final two. So that's a really good thing to look at. If you have any ideas, at Wrestling Guys PC on Twitter. I almost forgot that it's on Twitter because I almost said something else. But anyway, at FPP Show. We got anything new on the pike?
Stay tuned. That's all I can say.
All right, cool. He's working.
We're working.
He's working on a bunch of stuff. We got some good ideas here. I mean, listen, we just talked about Amazon and MGM. A whole lot of stuff going on there. What does that mean for the DC universe in terms of WarnerMedia and Discovery coming together? AT&T is stepping away from the media business, and they're the ones that were responsible for the Snyder Cut. So there you go. There's some stuff there.
There is one thing that a few things I'm hoping that we cover on our Fans Perspective, which we talk about movies and TV shows. I just watched part two of the In Search of Darkness documentary. And if you don't know what that is, part one and two are 4.5 hours each. Documentaries about 80s horror movies. And they cover each year of the 80s decade. And as I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, is the 80s the single best decade for movies, period?
Oof.
So I think that's a lot to touch on. And I think I'd like to compare, maybe compare 80s horror to 90s horror. Maybe compare the old horror icons to the new ones. So stay tuned. There's a lot that we're working on to fresh episodes coming. You know, we've been just kind of behind the eight ball lately, but stay tuned.
Wow, why have I never heard of this documentary?
Oh, it's awesome. If you have Shudder, they're both parts are on there.
Are they? I'm going to have to subscribe to another streaming service. They're getting us. They're getting us. They're getting our money. That's what they're doing. Damn you, all of you. Not WWE is going to get us too, you sons of bitches. That's why we're doing it. Look out for the XFL Part 3. That's what's happening with that money. Anyway, let's wrap this up here, man. As usual, thank you for downloading. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for leaving a note, comment, retweet, quote tweet. I don't care what you're doing as long as you're saying something, giving us some feedback. What do you think of Dark Side of the Ring, A&E biographies? What did you think of Double or Nothing? Let us know about some future underrated rivalries that we could cover. As usual, leave us that 5-star review anywhere where you get your wrestling podcast, and especially this one, rfpodomatic.com, which is also our main source of business there. How you doing? And as usual, this has been the Wrestling Guys Podcast. We came to talk about wrestling, drink some socially distant beers. We're just about all out of beers. We do the clink to seal the deal. Wash your damn hands. Stay safe. Wear a damn mask.